You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. Today, June 27th, the Christian Church commemorates Cyril of Alexandria. Who was this significant historical figure? Thanks to Concordia University Wisconsin for supporting The Coffee Hour. Find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin at cuw.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Jeffrey Boyle, Assistant Professor of Pastoral Ministry and Missions. He also serves as Director of Field Education at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Boyle, welcome back to The Coffee Hour.
Thanks, Andy. It's a joy to be with you.
Let's start with Alexandria and what city we mean when we're talking about Cyril of Alexandria. Where is Alexandria and what was significant about this city?
Great. Alexandria is a city in Africa and founded by Alexander the Great to be this city of intense academic power, place really of great influence throughout the empire. And it really became such under the Ptolemies as a place of philosophical training and learning, meant to rival Athens in that way. But then also it became a very significant place within religious thought, first with the Jews, one of the significant figures there being Philo of Alexandria, who had a very influential role in terms of biblical commentary and teaching, but from a uniquely, let's say, Platonic or allegorical mindset. And of course, that sort of thought that's running through the pagan philosophers that are central in Alexandria, also through Judaism, but then the Christian church in part runs with that. And maybe the most significant figure in the Christian history of Alexandria is Origen, whose allegorical reading of scripture is quite famous and notable. And the school that was founded there had in many ways continued that sort of teaching. So really a significant place within the empire, both academically, kind of in the thought, but then also the particular religious life that came from it.
So Alexandria was a significant cultural influence for the people of that region. And really that impacts, I guess, not just that region, but it reaches even further to civilization around the world as well. So what do we know about Cyril of Alexandria, particularly his family and early life, as well as childhood and youth?
Good. Cyril is born in 378, which is fairly significant. And just to kind of put him into context, he's born the year before St. Basil the Great dies. And so Cyril is born 3 years before the Second Ecumenical Council in Constantinople. So he's born at a time where the Arian crisis that is under Arius's teaching that Jesus is not fully God as the Father is God, or as Arius quite pithily said, that there was a time when the Son was not. That's the religious climate into which Cyril is born, and the council in Constantinople is about to, in many ways, solve the issue, or at least bring what has been a major crisis throughout the empire for the last, really, 60 or so years to an end. And that's when he comes on the scene. Well, he's then born to a very wealthy and pious family. His uncle, Theophilus, becomes Archbishop of Alexandria when Cyril's 7 years old. And it's shortly after that that Theophilus has Cyril brought to him in Alexandria and then trained him in the rhetorical schools there. He's trained in philosophy, but he's also an especially trained in rhetoric, a way of education that we are starting to come back to today and call it classical education. And we're starting to see that revival. And that's simply what Cyril was trained in. Not only that, but then he was sent to a monastery and the catechetical school that was there in Alexandria. And when he came, he was being tutored more or less by Didymus the Blind, who was a significant figure himself in terms of kind of biblical commentary and teaching in the church. But this school where Cyril was trained in is a school that, you know, Clement of Alexandria had a major role in, and Origen, and And so it's known to be kind of one of the centers of Christian thought in this early church period.
What would have been taught in the school that Cyril attended and in the monastery as well? What would have an instruction have looked like for him?
It would have been certainly heavy in the languages. So particularly his Greek would have been very well honed, not just in terms of the language, but then its culture and its people. He would have been trained in the Greek traditions and so forth. He would have also been given a strong logical or dialectic training. And so he would have been reading, certainly Plato would have been large there in Alexandria, perhaps also Aristotle and some of that logical and then metaphysical training. But rhetoric seemed to be supreme there for them in Alexandria. So it would have been training in how to speak well. A good man that speaks well is really the goal of rhetoric. And it would have had political ramifications, but then for Cyril in particular, it came to play out not just politically, but theologically. And in his role later on, taking his uncle's position of being Archbishop of Alexandria.
What did his education prepare him to do? What was the intent of his education? What was it intended to prepare him for?
I think Theophilus, his uncle, had handpicked Cyril very early on to be a successor. And he knew the prominence of Alexandria. He knew what would be needed in order for Cyril to thrive in that position. But he also knew how tumultuous it would be. So, for instance, in 385, that's when Theophilus becomes Archbishop of Alexandria. And just 6 years later, the emperor of the Byzantine kingdom at that point, Theodosius, had put into law a number of aspects that would bring paganism to its sort of crumbling end. So, and not only that, but Judaism as well. So Alexandria is a place of strong philosophical prominence, but then also a large and influential Jewish community. With Theodosius's religious laws that were enacted, you started to see the destruction of pagan temples, the conversion of these pagan shrines or temples into Christian churches, and also edict that would forbid any creation of new synagogues and or the building and restoration of existing synagogues. So what Theophilus knows is that if Cyril's going to step into this, he's stepping into a very tumultuous place and time that will require great leadership capacity. He's going to have to think wisely. He's going to have politically maneuver things in order to attain the success of really keeping Alexandria as a prominent place within the Christian empire.
So Cyril's uncle Theophilus served as archbishop. What do we know about the office of archbishop at this time in the church?
It is an incredibly influential office, not only within the church. There are five historic patriarchates, that is, seats of power that oversee large regions within the church, and Alexandria is one of them. Rome, of course, is perhaps most notable, but at this point, the divide seems to be between Alexandria and Antioch, as these two large and influential seats of Christian power and influence, not only them within the church, but also within the empire. So if you are emperor at this point, Theodosius, you know you've got to deal with the archbishop in each of these places, but Alexandria in particular. And so it's got a very prominent role within both church and state, and for which under Theodosius, there's much more overlap than there has been previously.
Yeah, I mean, that That brings to light a really good point. What was the relationship of the empire to the church, or the church to the empire, at this point in history?
You know, it had already begun. Certainly, we know under Constantine that the empire had at first made Christianity legal, which was a new thing. And under that legality, but then also preferential treatment with Constantine, we start to see it flourishing, right? So this is from 313 on, we start to see a growth within Christianity's public face. We start to see churches being publicly built. We start to see Christians rising in political prominence and power. And significantly here in 325 AD is when Constantine calls together the bishops for the Council of Nicaea because of this religious turmoil within the empire. Now, Constantine doesn't have any official standing with the church. He's not a bishop or anything, but he does, as empire, recognize his role for the peace of the people to call these bishops together to bring about a unity in the church. Well, we think of Nicaea as a great victory, and at first it was, but it was shortly thereafter that Constantine, in fact, favored the Arian position, the teaching that there was a time when Jesus, the Son, was not, and that Jesus was not a very God, as we confess it in the Creed, that he was less than the Father in respect to his divinity. There's a lot that Arianism has done wrong and had been strengthened by way of the emperor. This is the context, like I said, that Cyril's born into. And so this Arian crisis is looming large. But after Constantine, we do start to see this constant overlap between the emperor and the church as the two are coming closer and closer together, what we might call Christendom. And when the emperor is Christian, he uses his position of authority within the state to, in fact, not only protect, but to advance some of the teachings of the Christian church within the empire. And we see that specifically under the work of Theodosius.
We're learning about the history of Cyril of Alexandria today with the Reverend Dr. Jeffrey Boyle of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment, right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason, to use your God-given gifts to help others. To live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world. To live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates. Today, we're taking a look at the history of Cyril of Alexandria. Our guest is the Reverend Dr. Jeffrey Boyle, Assistant Professor of Pastoral Ministry and Missions, Director of Field Education at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Boyle, how did Cyril serve the church? When did he first begin serving the church in an official capacity?
Cyril took over, and it was not an easy or clean taking over from when his uncle Theophilus died. So his uncle Theophilus
You want me to start with the question again?
Sure.
Okay. How did Cyril begin serving the church in an official capacity?
Cyril's uncle Theophilus died in 412 AD. So having served the church in Alexandria as Bishop of Alexandria for 37 years. No, 27 years. Sorry, I've got to do my math right. For 27 years, Theophilus served as bishop, and then he died. He had ruled in a very strict manner, we might say. He was already trying to bring an end to the paganism of Alexandria and really limiting and enacting many of the laws that Theodosius had put in place in terms of restricting the ability of the Jewish community to thrive in that place. He was working hard against them, but he was also very adamant and maybe politically ordered against Antioch. And it seems to be that there's some sort of power struggle quite evident between Alexandria and Antioch. So much so that in 403, just 9 years before Theophilus died, he had even ruled over the Synod of Oak, at which St. John Chrysostom was deposed. And Cyril was there. Cyril was ordained as a lector, and he was there at that synod to see his uncle remove St. John Chrysostom. So you could see just some of the political tension. So when he died in 412, there was a desire of one faction within Alexandria to put forward, instead of Cyril, the archdeacon of Alexandria. And in a back and forth over a few months, finally it was Cyril that was elevated to be bishop. And so he rules from 412 as Bishop of Alexandria until his death in 444. So he's got 32 years of service in Alexandria as bishop, and it was by no means easy. So for instance, when he starts in 412, he has, in the first 6 years, he has an expulsion of Jews from Alexandria. He has, and that was on account of what seemed to be, or at least what was accused as, Jews burning churches. So he just removed them from Alexandria. Secondly, again, this major philosophical center in Alexandria, well, had philosophers that would side with the governor, the political governor of Alexandria. And so there was the story of Hypatia, a female philosopher who was very well known and had the ear of the governor. Well, under Cyril's reign, and to what extent he had any influence over this, we don't really know, but it was at least while he was bishop that Hypatia was removed from her carriage, brought into a church, and one account has her very violently kind of cut into pieces and then burned. So you can see the riot that started to take place. And this is in his first 6 years. And you think of a difficult ministry. Cyril certainly has that in spades, with the Jews on the one side, with the pagans on the other, and then the divide among many of the Christians. So that's what he starts into. But he starts to get a handle of kind of politically how to rein this in and how to do things a little more wisely. And so, well, for instance, one of the things he does is there's a large culture or worship of ice. And so rather than simply displacing or putting an end to the Isis worship, in a savvy move, establishes, he takes some relic of some notable local martyrs, and he put them in a church right next to this massive Isis worship temple, and offers the same sort of healing through these relics as they were offering in the Isis cult. And so rather than just forcibly removing the Isis cult, he set up something that would basically bankrupt and depopulate the Isis cult, and then brought an end to that. So whether he was right or not to attribute this healing power to the relic, he very wisely simply removed the people that way. And we might even say more winsomely, brought them over. That's the sort of terrain in the first 6 years of Cyril's coming to prominence as Archbishop of Alexandria. The next 10 years are actually 10 years of peace. And I think this is an incredible moment that is often overlooked, in large part because this isn't how we know Cyril. And maybe I'll jump to that for just a moment. We know Cyril because of Nestoria and the Nestorian controversy. What is kind of the part two of the Arian crisis whereas Arius wanted to deal with whether Jesus is true God or not, Nestoria wanted to figure out how it is that these two natures relate, and Nestoria is convinced that they are separate, that the divinity and the humanity of Christ are not one. Cyril is the one that solves that for the church and expresses it most persuasively, and it's his sort of form of orthodoxy that runs then how the church thinks about the person of Jesus Christ. They fail that because to get there, it's by way of these 10 years of peace in which he is reading and studying the scriptures. And I find it fascinating that of 10 massive volumes of Cyril's writings in Greek, 7 of them are biblical commentary, and only 3 are these theological treatises for which we tend to know him most. And so I think it's really his biblical study and the exegesis that he's working through the scriptures and teaching them that allowed him and prepared him for what followed, starting with this great Nestorian controversy.
What would you say are the lessons that can be learned from the life of Cyril of Alexandria?
For Cyril in particular, I think we need to wrestle with especially his theology. And he does give to us, really, I think, the greatest and clearest teaching on how these two natures of Christ are one in the person of Jesus Christ. And to that end, Nestorius would speak of that which is born of Mary is not, strictly speaking, God, and that which died on the cross, not strictly speaking, God. Of course, Nestorius would say God can't be born and God can't die, and the whole controversy surrounded whether Mary can be rightly called the mother of God. And Nestorius said no, and Cyril said yet. And for Cyril, it was because if Mary is not strictly speaking the mother of God, then Jesus, who is born of Mary, is not strictly speaking God. And if Jesus is not strictly speaking God, then you are still stuck in your sins, and there is no salvation. So for Cyril, everything was ordered toward the salvation of the sinner in the flesh of Jesus Christ, who is truly God. And because of Jesus being truly God, we can then rightly say that Mary is the mother of God.
Dr. Boyle, why is it important to you to study and to learn this history of church fathers like Cyril of Alexandria and others? Why is it important to you to learn this history?
I actually first discovered Cyril of Alexandria by way of reading our Lutheran Confessions. It's incredible in my mind that both in our catalog of testimonies, as well as especially in the Formula of Concord on our Christology and then also the Lord's Supper, how we tend to speak of and understand the bread and the wine together in this sacrament, delivering the true humanity and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ for our salvation. Our confession, we're citing Cyril over and over again. That is, so our own lineage of theological thinking through the confession is tied to Cyril. So in this way, he's not only a father of the faith to us in our theology, but he's one of the fathers of our own ancestry in this faith. So I think it's very important for us to know who it is that has handed down to us these forms of thought and expressions of speech. It's like knowing Athanasius when we're confessing the Nicene faith. And then also the Athanasian Creed, though he didn't write it, nevertheless, follows the pattern of the teaching. these names still come into our regular use, we should know something about them. It's a family history. It's knowing where we've come from and giving thanks to God for preserving and protecting these confessions and beliefs for us through these men who have valiantly fought for.
Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Jeffrey Boyle, Assistant Professor of Pastoral Ministry and Missions and Director of Field Education at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Boyle, thank you so much for spending time with us today, helping us take a look at this history.
It's been a joy to be with you, Andy, and I appreciate the time to thank through and commemorate St. Cyril of Alexandria.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.